there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 409. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Yet another jam-packed show for you this week with two incredible guests. Let me introduce the first one to you right this very second. Adam Groffman is the man behind the ridiculously popular blog Travels of Adam, which among its many accolades has been named one of the 10 best websites for 2016, one of the 7 best travelers to follow on Instagram, and was a finalist for the best LGBT blog. It also syndicates select content to additional news sites. Adam's popular series of hipster city guides, which we're going to talk all about, are globally recognized as a top resource for hipster holidays. Adam's work has been featured in The Guardian, Metro Newspapers, BuzzFeed, The Scotsman, Wired Magazine, Germany, tons and tons more, and the website is consistently ranked among the top 20 travel blogs by numerous online sources, often featured as a source of information on the travel industry, specifically hipster travel, which I want to learn more about. But first, Adam, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi. Great to be here.
We have so much ground to cover, Adam. Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, let's take a step back before we get specific, because I have been following you for quite some time now. It is my impression that in front of us is a well-worn path, but then over there on the side, that's where Adam is, on the not well-worn path. If I spoke to your friends and family who knew you growing up, would they say, oh yeah, that's totally Adam?
You know, it's actually funny the way I got to where I am now. It was never really part of my plan or kind of... necessarily expected, but yeah, in my early 20s, I just kind of changed my career and did a whole big thing, and now I run a blog.
I love it. I read that it all started with a trip to Iceland.
Yes. So basically what happened, I went to college in Boston. I was studying journalism, and then I eventually switched to advertising and communication because I really wanted to travel, and so in order to study abroad, I needed to change my degree, basically. So travel was always kind of a big part of who I was. And then when I graduated, I immediately started working as a graphic designer, and for the first 3 years out of college, I never left America. I barely left Boston or New England. So Labor Day 2009, I kind of spur of the moment said, okay, I've got a 3-day weekend. It's been years since I left the country. Where's the closest place I can go for a weekend that's not Canada or the Caribbean? And I ended up in Reykjavik, Iceland.
Wow.
For literally a 3-day weekend trip. I left work on Friday, landed in Iceland Saturday morning, and flew back to go back to work on Tuesday.
And that was the bug. I have to say, you know, look, I'm the professor who's the chair of my university study abroad committee, and it just always floors me how many young people have never been abroad. I know it sounds so basic, but why is it important that people get out there and travel?
Yeah, travel is, it really opens you up to new ideas and new experiences, and it kind of makes you... It puts you in uncomfortable situations, which you then have to work through, especially if you're a solo traveler. Like, I'm not always traveling alone, but quite often. And it's those experiences when you're alone in a foreign place, in an unfamiliar territory, maybe with a language you don't speak. And you really have to test yourself. And it's those experiences which open up new opportunities, and you learn something.
Now, I am not one of your parents, Adam, but I would imagine it was some sort of coming out process to them about saying, look, this is what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, so I ended up quitting my job in the middle of the U.S. recession in 2010, saying, okay, I've got this savings account, and my plan is to spend $20,000 traveling the world for the next year. And in the middle of the recession, I left this great job. I loved my job. So it was a bit of a shock to my family, and my friends, who everyone was struggling to work at that point. And here I was with a job and with a savings account saying, I'm going to spend all my money. But saying that, I had my family history as like a weapon to use against them. So when my father was in his 20s, and I grew up hearing this my entire life, he had quit his job and traveled around the world kind of following a dream. And at the time, it was the late 70s. So he followed the hippie trail. And I heard about this. I saw his photos the whole time I was growing up. So I did eventually follow in my father's footsteps, really. And I never expected to. Like, it wasn't really in my plan, but it just happened.
Yeah, he can't really have a response to that. Once he's told you those stories, what is he going to say?
Right. And, like, he knew, my family grew up hearing these travel stories. So we grew up appreciating and enjoying travel. So it was quite an easy sell to my parents after I used this for explaining it.
Do they have requirements about how often you need to be home?
I try to get home once or twice a year, because I'm living in Europe now. But when I first left the U.S. in 2010, on my initial big trip, I traveled for about 16 months before I saw my family again.
Wow.
They met me in Europe, actually. And then I went home and visited America again. But I did do like this big trip around the world. So the plan was not to return and just to keep traveling and spend my money and see how far I could get.
And you got pretty far. Now, at what point did you say, I have to have a blog? People need to know what's going on here.
Yeah, so this was also in the lead up to my initial big trip in 2010. I felt guilty quitting my job in the middle of the U.S. recession. This is the American in me. And I wanted to produce something or work on something or have some project. And I've been blogging on various blogs since I was probably 15, writing embarrassing poetry and things no one will ever be able to find. But I always loved social media and the internet. I grew up with it. So for me, I started the blog before I left on this big trip in 2010. And I used it as a platform for really connecting with other people. Even that trip to Iceland, I had used Twitter at the time to connect with people who lived in Iceland. And they gave me, tips on where to eat or what to do. And it was that connection through the internet with strangers that really propelled me to want to create a platform where I could share my own tips and experiences to help other travelers.
Yeah. Now, do you have a checklist? Do you have just a list of countries that you absolutely want to check out that you're working your way through?
There's a lot of things probably on my bucket list, but I don't have an official list because I'm quite spontaneous, I guess. So for me, there's a lot of places I still want to see, but I also really love returning to places I've been before. I'm a big fan of languages and food, and so when you return to a country that you've already visited, and maybe you go a little deeper on a second or a third visit, you get to do different experiences, and there's no wrong way to travel, but this is a deeper way of traveling. So you get totally different experiences sometimes from even visiting the same places.
Yeah. You mentioned before you gave a shout out to the American in you. I would imagine nationality is just kind of a tricky beast when it comes to traveling, especially for you because you have set up shop in so many different places. How does your American identity play into your role as a traveler all over this great world?
Yeah, so there's the nationality is such a complicated thing because you can be proud of a nationality, and I am generally proud of being American, but there's obviously a lot of things I disagree with or have complicated issues with. But for me, I'm quite proud of my roots and how I grew up and what I grew up around. Like, it's where I got this love of travel. So for me, it's like, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes of different types of travelers and specific nationalities. And oftentimes, you know, stereotypes are founded in some truth somewhere. But it doesn't always have to be a bad thing. So like as an American, like sometimes I am a bit more outgoing or friendly or social, or I'm quite good at small talk maybe. And it's with that, like I can connect with other people and I get to teach them a little bit about my type of culture, my American background, which is very different than another American. So while nationality has like a big national theme around it, when you're traveling, you connect on the individual level with other travelers or with locals, and you get to really show the diversity of your nationality.
Nice. Again, listeners, we are here with Adam Groffman, the man behind the award-winning blog, Travels of Adam. When you get to a different place, how do you go about exploring LGBT life in another country?
Yeah, for me, it's a lot about doing some research and then connecting with people. And usually that's through social media or apps, and asking people for information. There's a lot of information online about LGBT travel, but sometimes it's out of date. So it's really, you really have to connect with people. And this is the power of social media. I think Twitter and Instagram, like there's so many ways to connect with strangers from anywhere.
Yeah.
And with that, like you can really get a lot of information, and people love to talk about where they're from or what they do, or everyone loves to talk about themselves. I love to talk about myself. So I have a blog and it those, you know, creates real connections.
By the way, I'm just going to spend the rest of my day searching for some old Adam poetry. It's got to be out there somewhere. It's out there. What have you learned about yourself as a gay man traveling the world and interacting with people that many of us would never encounter because we're so stuck in our geographic roots?
That's a good question. It's made me comfortable because, but like I said earlier, traveling you push yourself and you put yourself in sometimes uncomfortable situations. And as a gay man, sometimes, yeah, you have to trust your instincts and trust your level of comfort at that moment in time. But I've definitely like connected with people from all over the world about being gay or like able to share my experience or hopefully teach them something if they're unfamiliar with meeting a gay person. For me, it's a big part of who I am. And while I'm traveling, it's not the only part of me, but it's certainly something I'm generally not afraid to let out or share.
Yeah. I don't even know if we mentioned Adam not calling in from across the street here in Cleveland, but actually in Berlin right now at the time of this recording. Kind of a big day there in Germany for the gays.
Yes, definitely. Just this morning, the German government finally legalized same-sex marriage and also adoption as part of it. So there's quite a lot of rainbow flags around. Quite nice.
But a problematic relationship with Miss Angela Merkel.
Yes. So this whole day in the past 2 weeks since they've brought up the subject again has been very complicated and very political. So Angela Merkel voted against it, even though she was the one who allowed the vote to take place. And there's a lot of political reasons behind it. There's an election for the chancellor later this year. So it's definitely a political ploy that's worked to probably her advantage, even though she's has come out and said she's against a same-sex marriage, and she voted no. But still, in the end, I guess it is a very good thing that we have it now.
Absolutely. If I pick up right this very second, I fly over to Berlin, I'll get there tomorrow. What would a day with Adam in Berlin be like? I want to know who you are as a guide. What would we do for my one day in Berlin?
Yeah, good question. I love Berlin. I've been here over 5 years. I live here. It's my home base. I travel all the time, but it is where I live. So for me, a day in Berlin, you can't miss Kreuzberg. You know, it's been called the Brooklyn of Berlin. It's the hipster neighborhood. You've got a huge multicultural environment. It's affordable, generally. There's lots of trendy shops and bars and cool cafes. So, and it's also a huge hotspot for graffiti artists and street art. So you can just wander around the streets and you'll see these huge murals by legendary street artists. I would explore Kreuzberg. This is where I take all my friends who visit. We go to a cool hipster cafe and have a nice real coffee. We wander around looking at street art. You can then, on a nice day, which is not always so common in Germany with the weather, you end up sitting by one of the canals. There's a lot of canals through Kreuzberg, and you can just sit all along the canal and have a picnic, have some beers. It's legal to drink in public here on the streets and sidewalks. You buy a cheap beer and sit by the park, watch the sunset, and then head out to a bar and then probably a club until Tuesday.
Nice. I was going to say, I don't fear that Adam's going to overschedule me. There's going to be some downtime too, but then we were just at a club until Tuesday. So that's incredible. Incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you have several times said the magic H word, which we have to deconstruct a little. How are we defining hipster these days?
Yeah, so the beauty of the word hipster is... it's quite hard to define, but everyone kind of knows what it means.
Right.
And so that you create your own definition. So for me, it is a subcultural trend word, but it's quite apt at describing a certain environment. So you find, it's where trends meet style and also this atmosphere or energy of a particular type of person. So, yeah, for me, a hipster can be quite ambiguous. And I think that it's got quite a negative connotation. A lot of people hate hipsters, and I understand that. And there's a lot of anger use it to explain, like, gentrification as well,
sure,
which is very complex and complicated for a lot of cities and neighborhoods, including Berlin. But as a cultural trend, it's quite clear at defining a particular environment.
Gotcha. And who knew that nearby Columbus, Ohio had such a hipster community?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about hipsters is that, hipsters tend to be young. And Columbus has this big university. And Columbus is super cool. I've been lots of times. My sister used to live there. It's quite a fun city, actually.
And before people wonder why did Ken just go straight to Columbus, Ohio, it's because you have a hipster guide to Columbus, Ohio.
Indeed, it's one of my original ones, and I'm working on an update actually this month. I have another 12 different hipster city guides and several more planned for later this year.
Where is the Cleveland one?
Cleveland, I've only been to twice, and I don't know enough about it, so I think another visit is probably in store.
There you go. You get to a new place, right? You do your research in advance, and that's important, and I like that we do that. When you get to a new place, what are you immediately drawn to? What are you looking for in a new place?
For me, I'm looking for that hipster neighborhood.
Yeah.
And usually that involves trying to find a used bookstore. I love to read. I read a lot of books, or I have in the past. you find the used bookstore, you find the record store, you find some men's fashion shop or the third wave coffee shop, and you find where those are, and then you can kind of explore that neighborhood. You end up kind of I use Google Maps on my phone, and I pinpoint all these types of places that I find. And then from that, you kind of create your own tour.
Nice. It strikes me, by the way, that there is quite the LGBTQ travel blogger community out there.
Yeah, there's more and more LGBT travel sites. When I started blogging, it was a subject not a lot of people talked about. And it was also a lot of the travel blogging was this new growing thing. And then as travel blogging expanded and grew, there was a lot of talk about specific types of travel and travelers. But still, LGBT travel was kind of left out. So that's personally why I started writing about it more and more, because I think visibility is so important for LGBT equality around the world. And then, through travel, you can do so much. So for me, it was a natural progression.
I love it. Well, what is coming up that's exciting for you, sir?
Oh, I'm working on some travel plans for later in the summer, mostly sticking in Europe. So still one of my favorite continents, and still I have a lot to see here. But otherwise, releasing some new guides. I'm coming out with a map, a printed map of a queer map of Berlin that has walking guides and historical markers, and that'll be released actually next week.
Very exciting stuff. Let's end with some advice for all our listeners out there. For those who are just kind of geographically stuck and are not sure how to take that first step to break out of their comfort zone, what is Adam's patented advice to get them out there in the world?
You have to be a little fearless. You need to take the risk and just book a plane ticket. And once you get a plane ticket, then you build something off of that. But that's usually the biggest hurdle. And once you get past it, once you spend the money, then you're committed. And you have to be, fearless. Don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone and go somewhere different. Tourists always have the advantage when you're in a foreign place, because people rely on tourism. People love tourists. And it can use it to your advantage.
Nice. Absolutely great. Adam Groffman, everybody, is the man behind the blog, Travels of Adam. You must go to travelsofadam.com. So many entries there. Helpful tips. You can follow Adam around the world. Adam, I find you to be just plain inspiring. I'm out there, I'm traveling, I'm writing, and yet still you present your travels in such a way that's so freeing to the rest of us. And again, I'm going to pivot right back to it. I find your adventures to be inspiring. It's really great stuff that you're putting out there in the world, man.
Oh, thank you so much. That's always so nice to hear, because I love what I do and I love sharing it with strangers and then connecting with people in real life as well. So yeah, that's really sweet.
Travelsofadam.com, everybody. Adam, please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, let's get all kinds of political here as we welcome Mac McGregor. Mac was appointed by the mayor of Seattle as a Seattle City Commissioner in 2011, and he served until 2016. He is a former board member for Seattle Counseling Center and sits on the Seattle Police Department LGBT Advisory Board. Mac continuously speaks on panels and solo events at numerous colleges, nonprofit groups, and state and city government on gender and sexuality. Mac's experience prior to transition was that of a successful female athlete and business owner. He was a former United States karate team champion. We're going to talk all about that. And Mac is a well-known martial arts competitor, coach, and teacher. And finally, Mac is currently a candidate for Seattle City Council. But before we get to all of that, let me just say, Mac, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Mac, as I was putting together your bio, I have probably at this point, 9 years into this show, spoken with 600-700 different guests. And as I was putting together your bio, I realized that one of the narrative threads that connects all my guests is that I worry that you people don't sit still for a second, and you're one of those people.
Yeah, my grandfather, you know, used to have the funniest Southern sayings, and he told me one day, he said, "You are like a fart in a whirlwind. You never land."
I can also say that in 9 years, that phrase has never been said on the show.
Oh, yeah, he had some great ones.
So is there a narrative thread that connects all of the different things that you do? Because I want to hit on all of these amazing different parts of your life. But what would you say connects how you move through this life journey?
Well, I would say, tell me something has never been done or is impossible, and I'll show you.
Nice.
How it can be done.
Nice. Is that who you were growing up? You were always looking to do the impossible?
Yes. I always, I love paving the way. You know, I became like the highest ranking female martial artist in the world collectively with all of my ranks. I have a fourth degree black belt or above in 17 different martial arts. And, you know, that had never been done, especially for someone at the time the world, you know, saw as female. So, yeah. And then I got a bug and I was like, oh, I like this. I like being a way paver. So I've kept doing it.
What are your earliest memories of being involved with martial arts? What prompted you to go that route?
Well, that's an interesting story. I was in elementary school, and my little elementary school offered a after-school program in martial arts and in karate, and I took it. And then we were supposed to, you know, do a little show at the PTA meeting for the parents and teachers, all of the different after-school programs, to show them what we had learned at one point. And our martial arts teacher could not be there. And I became the one they chose to lead the other kids that were in the after-school program and show off what we had learned. And I loved it. I was just like, it gave me the bug. It gave me the bug of teaching. It gave me the bug of doing things in a public way. It was just great. And I got a standing ovation from the parents, of course, because I was this little, you know, kid. And it was a lot of fun.
When I read in your bio, a well-known martial arts teacher, I assumed, you know, it was a few years ago, not in elementary school. That's incredible.
Yeah, I started at 6 years old.
Wow. I can only imagine that in a sport, as you mentioned, that is pretty darn male-dominated, and you broke a lot of barriers, I would imagine there was quite a bit of sexism involved in being a female competitor.
There was a lot of sexism, and there still is. Yeah, there aren't as many, you know, opportunities, of course. There aren't even as many weight categories in fighting. You know, they because all the weight categories for women are set by the old guys who run the show. And so any woman over 130 pounds is a heavyweight. So that's really interesting because you could be 135 pounds and have to fight somebody 215 pounds because they don't differentiate after 130 pounds.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's a big difference there. Give me a highlight. What was one of those times you walked off the mat and said, that was incredible?
I think the first time I won the U.S. fighting title, the U.S. Open, which is, you know, a coveted award, like every U.S. Open is in every sport. And I was only 16.
Wow.
And it was amazing. And I was not even a full black belt yet, but I had won so much in the brown belt category in competing that my instructor moved me up to compete in the black belt category, and I won. So it was pretty amazing. 16 rounds in one day, different fighters to do that.
I'm exhausted listening to that story, much less doing 16 in one day. And because we are all about balance, I would like to believe that there's not still a fight that you're still thinking about that you lost. You don't wake up in the morning and say, oh, I lost to that Cindy Lou Who.
No, no, not at all. I mean, I had a great run, and I won everything I wanted to win in fighting. In fact, now karate has the opportunity to be in the Olympics, but I mean, I was able to be in the World Championships, the Pan Am Games, you know, and train at the Olympic Training Center, but I was trying to hold on until we got, you know, of course I worked my whole life to try to be in the Olympics, but we didn't get the opportunity. And that was mainly because of the political, you know, BS from people that weren't competitors.
And now you use the martial arts to empower others, do you not?
I do. I teach community-based self-defense and empowerment and safety on a sliding scale so that everyone can afford to do it. I won't turn anyone away. And I think that that is so important. And then I teach some students private lessons as well.
Nice. Nice. Well, as I mentioned in your bio, you have done, I think, countless at this time, presentations on gender and sexuality. And I know that you've told your story so many times. Do you get tired of telling your own story?
Not when I watch the effects of it. Not when I, you know, I'm not one of these people that walks around with a chip on my shoulder about it, even though I came from the Deep South and went to a Southern Baptist high school and college. I've recovered from all that. And so when you can teach this stuff that is so foreign to most people, you know, the Huffington Post said not long ago that more people in the United States of America claim to have seen a ghost than think they've ever met a transgender person in person.
Wow.
So that is part of the disconnect on this, right? Because when people are exposed to somebody, groups of people they don't understand, you know, it normalizes it, but most people have never knowingly met a transgender person. So it's so important, those of us that feel safe enough to tell our stories and to talk to people about it. And I'm trying to up that statistic so we can, you know, be over the amount of people that have seen a ghost. So,
yes, I think we can maybe alter that barometer, but that's a good place to start.
Yeah, it sure is.
You know, I know that one of the challenges in doing these presentations, because, you know, Lord knows I've been doing them for so many years, is connecting your personal story to something more universal, because your personal story is just that. It's personal, and you have an audience in front of you that likely has not transitioned. What are the universal pieces that you hit on when you're out there in front of a group to bring everybody together?
That's a good question. One of the things I say is to adults is I say, you know, I want you to think back of that prom picture of you in your high school yearbook. Are you still that same person?
Right.
You know, and everybody kind of chuckles and, you know, they think about the ridiculous hair they had or whatever, you know. And of course, we're not the same person. And then I take them, you know, a little further in life, you know, and talk about different times that we've all gone through transitions in life. This is just one that you haven't been exposed to that much. But none of us are the same person we were at that high school prom, you know, if you're 30 or even 25, right?
Right.
So, yeah, so it's just a point that when we think of different phases in our life, we have all transitioned. So I try to bring people to that understanding.
Nice.
And it really seems to open people up.
Oh, without question. Without question. Are there any questions, Mac, that you would like to retire? Are there questions? Because I would imagine a lot of these presentations have evolved over the past 10 years, although, again, I still want to beat out that ghost number. But are there any questions that you feel like at this point, gosh, I wish everybody knew this already?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest question most transgender people want to retire is the fascination with genitalia.
Yeah.
You know, that they reduce many of us, whether you're intersex, they also do this to intersex people, or transgender people, they kind of reduce us to thinking of us as this package of genitalia. And, of course, that's ridiculous.
Right.
And, you know, that's not what this is all about. And that, you know, when people ask me, when did you transition? I always find that an interesting question. When did you transition? And I always look at people and say, I think what you're asking me is, when did I have my first medical procedure?
Right.
Because to me, transition started at 4 years old when I started changing my name playing with other kids because I got the Southern Belle name my mother gave me didn't fit. You know? It's a long journey is what I'm, you know, and it's not just a medical procedure, but that's what most of the rest of the public think is transition is just about a medical procedure. And of course it's not. It's an entire journey that goes on inside of us long before that.
So much more than that. Again, listeners, we are here with Mac McGregor, a current candidate for Seattle City Council. Let's transition over to talking about your public life. Talk to our listeners about the work that you've done with the Seattle Police Department, because some really important work there, Mac.
It is. I was on a small group of local activists that helped Seattle Police Department develop training and policy around how to deal with transgender individuals and gender fluid, gender queer individuals when they either call to report a crime or are stopped by a police officer for a traffic violation, and so on. So I helped them develop policy, which are still pretty new. Police chief was like wonderful about and pulled us in to do this and was all for. And that was amazing. I love, you know, doing this because so many people in the transgender community are scared to death
right.
of coming into contact with a police officer because there's such a lack of understanding. And sometimes your ID doesn't quite match your presentation yet when you're going through this. And that is a thing of privilege. And a lot of people don't understand that because if you don't have the resources, to cost money to get all those things changed over and so on, you know. So,
yeah.
So explaining that to officers, they had no idea that was a thing of privilege, you know, and explaining that someone's not trying to be deceptive when they're transgender. They're going through this very difficult process, and there's a lot of steps and hoops to jump through, really opened their eyes.
Great and crucial.
Yeah.
Well, before we talk about Seattle City Council, I want to read you a quote. I don't know if you know this person. Her name is Dawn Celeste McGregor. I feel like you're acquainted.
Yes. I married her.
You married her. Okay, good. So there's some familiarity here. I won't make assumptions about how much. But in one piece online, Dawn Celeste McGregor said this quote, "My husband is not a politician. He's an activist." Do you also subscribe? I mean, you have to agree with Dawn Celeste McGregor because you married her, but do you feel the same way that you are an activist and not a politician? And if so, where do you see the distinction?
Well, I think, you know, in the definition of what a politician represents today, the majority of people that call themselves politicians and what they represent today, I really don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And I refuse to sell out to money and to corporations and things like that over human rights issues.
Right.
You know, I am going to take care of people first and foremost. And that is where I'm much more of an activist.
Nice. Okay, good.
Because I think most politicians have sold out.
I like the answer, but I also like that you agree with Dawn Celeste McGregor because I want everything to be great.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Now, at what point did you say, I have to do this. I'm running for Seattle City Council.
You know, I had been thinking about running for office for a couple of years and hadn't decided on which avenue to take, whether to run for, you know, the state senate or house first or city council. And then when, after this last election with what happened, I was just so determined that those of us that can have to step forward now, that we are not going back in the shadows. I don't care who's in the White House or who's running Congress. We have to step forward because there was so much, you know, people were distraught in the LGBTQ community because we knew what this administration was going to do, start to pull the rug right out from under us for all the rights we had worked so hard to gain. And that's exactly what they're doing. And so, of course, a lot of people were depressed and distraught and just, you know, and still dealing with that. But I think it really encouraged me that, no, we cannot back down. We won't go in the shadows. I have to do this now.
Yeah. Now, one of the requirements, and I just decided this, for being on the Seattle City Council is you have to sell our listeners on the great city of Seattle. Talk about the great things happening in Seattle right now.
Well, Seattle, honestly, coming from the South, I think Seattle is the promised land. It is amazing, especially as far as acceptance, and not just acceptance, but actually they celebrate diversity here. And so that is really wonderful. We passed $15 minimum wage. We were the only state to vote in marriage equality by our state House and Congress. We passed marijuana too, medical and recreational marijuana at the same time. So we have a lot of wonderful things in this state. Plus the city is just beautiful. I think I've traveled all over the world and I think this is one of the most beautiful places in the United States because we have the mountains in the background and the water surrounding the city. It's just gorgeous.
Nice. Now, I would imagine there are some issues there that you would like to work on.
Oh, my gosh, yes. So as wonderful as it is, of course, there's still work to do. We are one of the fastest growing cities in the United States right now, and we have a homeless crisis. They just did a count about a month ago and found we have over 11,000 people in this city that are either living in tents on the streets or in cars. And some of those are children that have to get up and go to school the next day. You know, and this, we have to do something about it. It's at an emergency situation where we need to do triage. And one of the things I want to do is like open a bunch of emergency shelters with property we already own in this city, like community centers. We just have to turn around, staff them at night. But we need to like really take care of this and be able to put caseworkers in those shelters right away to help start evaluating, you know, doing triage, evaluating the situation and see where each of these individuals needs help.
Absolutely.
So that we can get them into permanent housing.
One of the phrases that I saw repeatedly on social media and on your website, and I think it's a pretty key one to how you're approaching this, talk to our listeners about community empowerment and why that's important.
Well, we need each neighborhood in Seattle, as big and vibrant of a city as this is, we need, you know, each neighborhood has its own unique challenges. North Seattle is very different, the needs there from South Seattle and so on. And so we need to actually listen. One of the things I think that's happening so much with some members of our current city council and mayor is that we're not listening to the citizens enough. And we need to get out there and really in the different neighborhoods and listen to what the needs are from the people in those communities. Many times, you know, politicians assume they know what certain type of parts of the community need. Like they think they know what the LGBTQ community needs and they're not LGBTQ. It's like, how can you know without coming in and asking us and talking to us, you know, about what we need and the best ways we think to solve that? Have us be involved in it. That's the same thing I want to do in all of the communities here in Seattle.
Nice. Nice. Now, when is the election?
Well, the primary is August 2nd. The top two vote getters then go to the general election in November.
Okay. How's it looking for you?
It's looking good. We have 8 people running for my seat, and I think, you know, there's probably 4 of us that are really good, close candidates. So between the 4 of us, it's going to be close.
Now, how do you approach this? Do you just, I would imagine you have just a million events that you have to go to and get your name out there.
Oh my gosh, exhausting. I have to be at everything. Yes. I'm actually so glad it's the 4th of July weekend because they don't have as many, you know, campaign forums and things because so many people go out of town. So I get a couple of days of a little bit of a break. But, wow, I have to be at everything. And imagine, you know, here a week ago, it was Pride and a lot of candidate events as well. So I had to be at twice the events. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not for the faint at heart.
No, it is not. No, it is not. Having run for office and I was elected back in Vermont, I was exhausted. Mine was a small little town. I can't even wrap my mind around Seattle. Now, let me ask you the most important question of all of the questions. Okay. Do you, Mac McGregor, have lawn signs?
Oh, not yet.
Mac, come
on. I am in the process of ordering them.
Okay.
Yeah, I am in the process of ordering them. You know what? Here's the other thing. I have made a decision to not take contributions from developers and corporations. I do take them from small businesses. And so there are a couple of candidates that have a ton more money that are, you know, doing that. A couple of them are taking those developer and corporate donations. And so, you know, I am really relying on the individual donor and the small business owner. They can throw in $25. Every little bit helps, $50, you know. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm a real grassroots candidate.
I love that.
I do have posters.
Okay, good. Please say that they say Max got your back.
They do say Max got your back. Yes,
okay.
They do.
I'm telling you, you need a good catchphrase. You have a good catchphrase. This is a good thing.
You know, even the governor of Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, you know, I've done a few things where him and I have been working together on certain things, and I got to see him, and I gave him my campaign card, and he looked at it, and he goes, well, first of all, I love the logo, but the slogan, Max got your back, that is great. He's like, that's so catchy. That was over a craft beer with a couple of buddies, and we were brainstorming about what my slogan should be, and that came out. So there you go.
That's good stuff. That is good stuff. Well, I hesitate to even ask you this because, you know, we're only a 59-minute show, and your answer could go forever, but what's coming up that you are excited about?
Oh, wow. Well,
exactly.
You know, so much. Yeah, there's, I mean, you know, I get a little break for a few days and then we go right back to many candidate forums. But what I like the most, actually, instead of the forums, is going to events. I am the only candidate that bought a booth at a bunch of events here. This is festival season in this area, you know, and there's everything, but we have the Fremont Solstice Festival and things like that. And I bought a booth at these and I got to talk to so many great people that live in this city that, you know, I wouldn't, like, aren't in my normal circles I run into, but going to these festivals and putting up a table with a sign and people come and talk to you about their concerns. And it's really cool. What I like the most is getting out and just meeting the real working people.
Yeah. And what are you trying to convey to people, right? Because the trick of all this, and I wish that everyone would listen to a 25, 30-minute podcast and they'll learn all about you, but we know that in some of these interactions, you only have that elevator pitch. What do you want people to know about you for that elevator pitch?
Well, I think the most important thing is that, you know, when we raise up people in marginalized communities, that it benefits all of us. And I guess if I was to sum it up, that would be it. I really live by this quote Martin Luther King said, and it is, we will never have a first-class nation as long as we have second-class citizens. And I truly believe that. And that is for our city as well. And right now, our homeless are being treated like second-class citizens. And there are other groups in the city that are being treated like second-class citizens and in our nation. And that's, I think we have to get that we're all connected and it actually affects us.
So,
you know,
important.
And that's so important. How we treat our most marginalized says everything about who we are as a city. It says who we are, you know, when we go to a place, how we treat the waiter or waitress, how we, you know, it says so much about who we are. And we have to change that, I think, in the way we look at things, because many people sit back and go, well, that's not my problem. Look at that homeless person. It's not my issue. It doesn't affect me. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. It weakens our whole society when we don't take care of people, we don't take care of their health. Guess what? It costs us more in the long run, right? You know, I could go on and on about the things that when we don't take care of these things, they become bigger problems that weigh on us as a society, and then that affects each of us.
They sure do. They sure do. All right, last question for you, and it is one of my favorite topics to talk about on this show. Talk to our listeners about why it's important that LGBT people in particular run for office.
Wow. Well, you know, representation matters.
Yeah.
I am one of 11 people right now in the United States that is transgender running for office. This is not about me personally. This is about a movement. I believe this is the next civil rights movement. And, you know, I think it's so important for people to see, you know, people that represent them running for office. And there's never been a voice like mine. There's never been a transgender person on any ballot ever in the state of Washington. I will be the first.
Wow.
That's a big deal. Gosh, yeah, the other day I'm at an event and I spoke for a few minutes and then, you know, I stepped off and I'm standing there, you know, listening to the other people speak. And a young lady walks up to me and she says, Mac, thank you so much for what you're doing. She said, I always wanted to go into politics. I thought that's a way I could help people because she said, I like to work on policy. She said, I'm a bit of a policy, you know, junkie. And she said, but I'm getting ready to start my transition. And I thought, if I'm a trans person, I can never go into politics. And she said, you just told me I could.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. Listeners, yeah. Mac McGregor is a candidate for Seattle City Council. You can learn more about Mac by going to votemacmcgregor.com. That's votemacmcgregor.com. You just said it. It's all about the representation. You are using your voice in such a powerful way. I have to ask, as a resident of Cleveland, Ohio, how many times am I allowed to vote for you?
Well, I tell you what, make sure you tell your friends in Seattle to vote. But what you can do, you can help spread the word. Because I'm a grassroots campaign and you're doing that, what I tell people that don't live in Seattle is spread the word, spread it on social media, you know, tell your friends, send $10, do whatever, you know, but you can help even from a distance.
You got it. You got it. Again, listeners, vote MacMcGregor.com. Just by being in this race, Mac, you are making a difference, and we wish you all the best with everything that's about to happen.
Thank you so much.
I look into the window of my mind. Reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my can't stop me now, and you can do the same, yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never too late to try. What have you done today to make you feel proud? Mm-hmm. You could be so many.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we don't have a ton of time left on this week's episode, but let's get to some of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, has named an anti-trans activist as a senior advisor. Now, to what you say? To a position that has absolutely nothing to do with gender? No, you would be completely wrong. Donald Trump has named an anti-trans activist as a senior advisor to the Office of Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment. An anti-trans activist to the Office of Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment. Bethany Cosma, who held positions in the White House and Homeland Security under George W. Bush, vehemently opposed guidelines issued by President Obama's administration that advised schools to let trans students use their preferred names and pronouns and use the restrooms and locker rooms that align with their gender identity. And if you were to Google Bethany Cosma, the advocate highlights that you will uncover a treasure trove of hateful, woefully misguided anti-trans propaganda. She wrote in one piece, this is Bethany Cosma, she wrote this, quote, "A boy claiming gender confusion must now be allowed in the same shower, bathroom, or locker room with my daughter under the president's transgender policies when I learned that predators could abuse these new policies to hurt children in school lockers, shelters, pool showers, or other vulnerable public places like remote bathrooms in national parks, I realized I had to do something." That is just some of the oldest hate mongering in the books. All of these anti-trans sentiments, and yes, she now has been appointed as a senior advisor to the Office of Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment. It is a slap in the face to all women. Yeah, that's where she was appointed. And in fact, that particular office has a long history of supporting programs that advance LGBT equality around the world. And now there's a lot of questions there about whether they will move in a different direction. Let's turn our attention to Texas. The Texas Supreme Court just issued a disturbing ruling declaring there exists no clear right to spousal benefits for married same-sex couples. The unanimous decision sprung from a challenge to spousal benefits that Houston provided to city employees, even though that federal Supreme Court marriage equality case legalized same-sex marriage throughout the nation and extended all the rights that go along with marriage. Conservatives in Houston continue to challenge spousal benefits, claiming the Supreme Court case was not the last answer on whether or not these benefits should be conferred, which is a little bit ridiculous because that's what the Supreme Court does. It is the last possible answer. But according to this court in Texas, not so much. The opinion, which was written by Justice Jeff Boyd, said this, quote, "We decline to instruct the trial court how to construe the Supreme Court case on remand. The case now heads to the Harris County District Court, which must determine if the Supreme Court case guarantees same-sex spousal benefits to Houston City employees. The Texas Supreme Court, which the Austin American Statesman reports is filled with Republicans, initially refused to hear the challenge to the Supreme Court case, but changed its mind after being threatened by the anti-gay conservatives bringing the case. Texas Supreme Court justices are elected. They are not appointed." So a very, very disturbing ruling there from Texas. GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, said this, quote, "Decision this morning is a warning shot to all LGBTQ Americans that the war on marriage equality is ever evolving." Keep our eyes on that. Some news out of the wonderful world of hip-hop. Jay-Z's mom has come out as a lesbian, dropping a surprise pro-LGBT anthem collaborating with her son. Jay-Z, you know, Beyoncé's husband, he dropped his long-awaited new album 444 on his streaming service Tidal just recently. One of the tracks on the album, Smile, features his mother, Gloria Carter, who reveals publicly for the first time that she is gay. Jay-Z raps this, quote, "Push through the pain so that we can see new life, so all the ladies having babies see a sacrifice. Mama had four kids, but she's a lesbian. Had to pretend so long, she's a thespian. Had to hide in the closet, so she medicate. Society shame and the pain was too much to take." This is a very big deal. In this particular music genre, where there are not a lot of references, certainly not a lot of positive references to being gay, it's a big deal that Jay-Z, one of the biggest hip-hop stars in the world, if not the biggest hip-hop star in the world, put out there that his mom is gay on a track. Things like this absolutely make a difference. Love that. Love this story, too. A teenage fashion designer from Los Angeles is upcycling unwanted clothes and donating them to young, homeless LGBT youth. We love stories about young people making a difference. Dylan Eisman is a high school senior who invented Sew Swag, that's S-E-W swag. He decided to put his love of fashion to use for the community. Speaking to NBC Out, the 18-year-old explained that he was heartbroken when he realized the extent of the homelessness issue that young LGBT people faced. "Seeing people," this is what he said, quote, "seeing people who are my age who are not accepted and basically kicked out of their families because they're gay was just so heartbreaking." Well, he hopes that one day he can be so skilled that he can create his own brand on a much larger scale with other people working with him. In the interim, he is using his skills to upcycle clothes and provide them to LGBT homeless shelters. Such a great thing. That's the whole message, folks. Use your skills. Whatever your skills might be, use them and make a difference. For Adam Groffman, he's traveling the world and he's blogging. I still want to get some examples of his poetry, but he's blogging right there on Travels of Adam. And you have to check out the great work that he is doing. And of course, Mac McGregor is using his voice. He's running for public office. There's so many different ways to do it. You just got to figure out your way. Go do it. It will make you feel amazing. Get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to do it to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. While you're making a difference, while you are using your voice, I implore you, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?